Blog Talk Radio.
Be Unique Radio brings you unscripted conversations with world changers and difference makers Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on all your favorite platforms. Visit beunique.org to learn who is scheduled next and how you can talk with our guests and become part of the show. That's beunique.org. See you there.
Welcome to the show, everybody. My name is Mary Brotherton. I'm your host for tonight, and I'm here with my buddy and co-host, Gene Albertson. Gene, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Hope everybody's doing well. You, Mary?
I am. I always look forward to Thursday nights because you just never know who's going to be on the show. And tonight, I think we have somebody really exciting. Dr. Anna Jo Pye. And that's not somebody you can eat. She was born in Beijing, China. And when she was four, her family immigrated to the United States. She earned a bachelor's degree in zoology from Sweetbriar College, a master's degree in embryology from, Bryn Mawr College. A Ph. Degree in genetics from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. Now, you taught most recently at Montclair State University in New Jersey, correct?
Well, that's the only place that I've really ever taught at.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm pleased to be here.
And I found out about you because somebody, your publicist told me about a book you had written. And I'd love to talk with you more about it.
Well, it's really an autobiography about not just me, but also about my mother. And what I hoped it would contrast would be the difference between the way she responded to being an immigrant to the United States and the way that I grew up in the United States, even though I was born in Beijing. But I came when I was only 3 years old, so essentially it was like I was born in this country. So my mother's response to being in the United States was quite different from mine. This was all that I ever really knew, whereas she spent quite a bit of her life in China, and then came to a totally foreign country with a foreign language and foreign custom.
I can imagine that it is quite a shock when you're raised, you know, you live in one country and then all of a sudden you're somewhere else. But for, like you said, for you, it was second nature, I'm sure.
Well, for me, as long as I was with my family, just like any child, you feel safe and you just accept what there is, as long as your family is with you, and that's what I was fortunate enough to have. So I grew up in this country starting at such a young age that it was essentially like I was born in this country.
Because and, all of your formative years were here.
Absolutely. I came over the first time when I was only 3 years old. Then we had to return to China a year later because of the illness and finally passing of my paternal grandmother. And then we came back again in 1940 and essentially stayed here ever since.
Mm-hmm.
So all my education was over here, and I am far more comfortable with the English language than I am with the Chinese language, although I had to speak Mandarin because that was really all that my mother spoke.
And
my father,
what about your father?
And was a linguist. I mean, he was good enough in English to be one of the first Chinese English interpreters simultaneous interpretation for the United Nations.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Now, I bet I have a little... Ma'am?
He had to know the languages so well that he could do the simultaneous interpretation at meetings of the United Nations.
Oh, my goodness. Somebody asked me recently if I spoke any Spanish. I said, just enough to get me in a lot of trouble. I can't imagine speaking it simultaneously.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And not only that, if I remember right, I don't know if they still do this at the United Nations, but they would have people who knew both languages that an interpreter, a simultaneous interpreter, was supposed to be using to make sure that they were, in fact, interpreting correctly from one language to another.
You know, that's something that always concerned me. You know, what if you ask somebody in another language and they tell you the answer, and what if it's wrong? You don't know the
well,
difference.
Well, this is why all of the delegates at the meetings would have people who would be listening in on what was said by whoever was speaking and what was then translated or interpreted.
Uh-huh.
And then,
well, very cool.
Yes,
it's like translators.
You could have
translators.
An interpreter start a world war if they didn't do it right.
Exactly. And there are so many languages that have a very subtle nuance between one word and the next word.
Yes.
So you've got
absolutely.
To be very careful.
That's right. Well, as far as I knew, and of course, I was never. I never watched my father doing the simultaneous interpretation, but he would talk about it. There were always people in the different delegations that could listen to all of the different interpreters to make sure that they interpreted what the speaker was saying correctly, because it was, in fact, you know, on the world stage.
Sure.
And you could, I suppose, really do start a war if you don't interpret correctly. But this never happened because there would be enough people checking on what was being interpreted.
That's a talent that's almost an art form to be able to do that.
I think so, because there's a lot of times when a person who could translate something, the written language, would have a good deal of trouble doing simultaneous interpretation. It really did require a certain talent beyond just knowledge of the languages. And I was always in... awe of my father for being able to do what he did.
I'm in awe, and I don't even know the man. So I can imagine as a child you'd be very impressed by that.
Sure.
Well,
absolutely.
You come from a line of impressive people. Your maternal grandfather, I believe, was a warlord.
Yes, he was what the history books would speak of as a warlord.
He was a warrior, that's for sure.
That's right. And my paternal grandfather was a scholar. And that's where the academic background of my father came in.
Now, are your children... scholars as well, your sons?
Well, they both have graduate degrees. So by whatever the definition that scholars would mean to people, they do have, both have master's degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And are quite knowledgeable in their own ways.
And I'm sure your grandchildren are still in studies, probably in their 20s.
Yes, they are. Some of them are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them are. Well, you know, there is an academic history to our family, and we have always put an emphasis, because it's part of Chinese culture to do so, put an emphasis on excelling in school.
I think it should be in any culture, but yeah, the Chinese definitely do emphasize education.
That's right. I mean, one is honored for being a scholar. I mean, there are cultures where that really isn't so much the case, and I think that I would include the American culture in that.
Yeah, unfortunately. I think you're right.
You know, it depends. It depends. I have certainly in my lifetime known a number of Americans whose families were very much involved in education.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think it varies from region to region and family to family. And I have a family of eight children. I'm one of eight children, and mm-hmm. about half of us are more erudite than the others who tend to work, and they're all experts in their field, but
right.
I'd say about half, you know, half of my brothers and sisters were very content to go as far as the 12th grade and stop, and the rest of us
right.
pursued higher education.
Right, yeah.
And you can't explain why it's that way.
Yeah, in different cultures, how important it is to the culture, how important education is or academic activity is, differs.
Yeah, that's, I think, the big difference, the importance of it.
Yeah, well,
that's
I remember my mother, and I'm sure it's because she did have eight children. She didn't have time to think too much about it, but she emphasized good behavior more than good grades. She just
Absolutely.
Wanted to make sure her children
yeah.
didn't get into trouble.
Right. And that is also true in the Chinese culture too. And in addition, I think, which is a slight difference between how between the Chinese attitude and American attitude is that in the Chinese culture, how one lives one's life is a reflection on the family.
Yes, yes.
So
and
that, yeah.
I think if more people felt that way, we might have a calmer, more peaceful world. Because
well, I
if
think
everybody,
a lot of people do feel that way, but it's just not been a part of our culture in this country, as opposed to how important it was for the culture of the Chinese family.
Yes, I think our culture comes from a culture based in land ownership and passing that on, land ownership and wealth to the family.
Yes.
Maybe as opposed to more community based thought.
Right.
That's a good point,
right.
Gene.
That's a
very,
very
good
point.
Primogeniture.
Yes.
Yep.
I'm going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about your book and.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Be happy to have it.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. Do you prefer coffee or tea? This is a question we ask on our fun and informative millennial talk show called Coffee or Tea, No Phones Allowed. And why do I know? Because I'm Anna. I'm one of the co-hosts. It's a great time. It's a professionally edited weekly series that's free to watch on Be Unique's YouTube channel. That's B-U-N-E-K-E. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode and leave us a comment with your topic or guest recommendations. We love hearing from you.
And we are back. I'm Mary Brotherton. I'm here with my co-host Jean Albertson and Dr. Anna Cho Pai. You wrote the book, Heavens to Betsy. I don't remember the name of the book, and I don't have it in front of my face. What's the name of your book, Dr. Pai?
Manchurian Princess to the American Dream.
Yes. The title refers really to my mother, who lived a life, started life as essentially a Manchurian princess. And the American Dream refers really to my life,
mm-hmm.
where I was born in China but came over at a very young age, so that it was essentially like I was born in this country and I was raised in America, and I am more American than I am Chinese in a lot of ways.
Well, Jean, I just did it again. I lost my rosemary and my thought.
Well, the thing that I was thinking about, what you describe in your book then, is really the story of the transition from your mother coming from this culture of really royalty, which to a American suburban mom kind of thing.
Absolutely. I think that the move was especially difficult for her. In part, it was really her own fault, but in part it was also because of her upbringing in the classic way of being a housewife, and what was important for her to handle for the family, and learning the English language was not something that was important for her to do, because she never worked outside the home, and so therefore not having to learn the language. And she did not ever really learn the language. She understood more than she was able to express.
Kind of like my cat.
Well, I don't know what your cat was like, but she was not able to express her feelings in English. And so she kept to her Chinese friends rather than making friends of neighbors, for example.
Ah.
And people that would force her to speak English. We, on the other hand, the children, were forced to remember how to speak Mandarin so that we could speak with her in Chinese rather than in English. So she never really had to learn how to carry on a conversation with English, and therefore never really got involved in becoming part of American society.
Hmm.
Now, can you tell me why she and your father immigrated to America?
Oh, that was a very clear reason. The invasion of China by the Japanese.
Well, that's a good enough reason right there.
Oh, yep. My.
Japanese invaded China through Manchuria, which is where my mother and father's families were. And so they first had to leave Manchuria and ended up in Beijing, where my brothers and I were born. But then as the Japanese continued to invade, not only through Manchuria, but then, of course, decided that they were going to take over all of China. We, as prominent family members, had to leave China. And I don't know what went into my parents' decision, but certainly safety has to be a major reason that they decided to come to the United States. My father had learned some English in school. He went to college. My mother, of course, did not go through formal education at all, which for her generation, the women normally didn't. They stayed home, took charge of family servants and so forth. when we came to the United States, she had no knowledge of the language, no knowledge of the culture. And indeed, their attitudes, I can remember that there were signs where they felt that they were coming to the United States and that the people of the United States were lesser, less important to them than were in the Chinese society.
Well, because they came from a different class of people, different class level.
That's right. It was a class that the United States did not have.
Right.
It was a class system.
And I think that's one of the reasons that a lot of people in the United States are fascinated by countries that do have royalty, because it's not something we've ever had.
Right, right. Well, by the time my parents were adults, of course, China did no longer had royalty. It had become a republic rather than a kingdom that it used to be. So my father, anyway, was not uncomfortable with the system of governance that we have in this country compared to China. But my mother had still been brought up in a society where our families were well known, prominent, and rich.
Right.
And she came to the country, and her adjustment was not with language or culture that was that important for her, because she never had a job outside the house, outside the home. And so she never really understood American culture and didn't think it was important for her because of her attitude.
Right.
Toward American
Gene
culture.
And I've had conversations. He's from South Dakota. I'm from South Carolina. And we both ended up in Florida. But we've noticed how in different areas of the country here, people have different cultures, different ways of thinking and being and doing.
That's right. That's right. And you just make that difference more intense when you come from a different country and your language totally is different. That's a big thing. And she never really, my mother never really learned to converse in English.
And that's got to be one of the toughest obstacles, if you will, to any sort of assimilative activities.
To the point where she didn't even know that it was an obstacle.
Wow.
It's humorous, but it's not. You know, it's also sad. But what you don't know, you don't know.
That's right. That's right.
Because in her, I would imagine in her isolated world that she had created for herself, she was the queen of that world, and everything revolved around her version of reality.
Oh, yes. My family in China was so well known that people that they knew here in the, or that they met here in the United States, Chinese families, would have heard of her family. And, you know, the Chinese culture is such that there would be a certain deference in their attitude towards my parents, which they accepted.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wow, I can actually relate to that. I just went back to an instance that I had. I had a lifetime of doing a job of basically I've been a director or a professor or in charge of things, basically running the show. And I had a job fairly later on that I enjoyed. It was an office coffee service delivery guy. And I just started, now it's going along down, just really enjoying myself. And all of a sudden, this woman just spoke to me in an extremely condescending, oh, garçon, sort of way. And she was serious. And it just struck me like, wait a minute. And then I realized just all of a sudden what had just happened. And it was like, yes, ma'am, I can certainly help you.
That's right. Yeah.
So
yeah,
it is,
you know, people of the stature of the families that my parents came from, they had, since they were small, they had servants. Each one had an individual servant to themselves and grew up with servants. I can remember when we went back to Hong Kong one year, my father, being in the United Nations Secretariat, like everybody in the United Nations that came from different countries, they each were given a certain amount of time to go back to their native countries. And for us, since during the early years of the communist regime, China was mainland was essentially closed to overseas Chinese, we would go to Hong Kong as being as close to our homeland that we could get to on my father's home leaves. And my mother would have tailors in Hong Kong, hire tailors to come and make the Chinese dresses for myself and herself. And she would treat them like she used to treat service people in China. And that made my brother, my oldest brother, get into big arguments with my mother because he just thought that she treated them poorly, like they were her servants. Well, she did, because she thought they were her servants. That's how she grew up. She had people like that come in and treat her in that manner. And if these people that she hired in Hong Kong to do things for her also grew up in that kind of atmosphere, they accepted their positions. But for my brother, who was, of course, much more aggressive than I was. I was the youngest child. He would be very upset with my mother for the way she talked to people like a tailor. And she would not accept his criticism because she didn't think she was doing anything wrong. That was the way she was brought. So it was kind of interesting to watch things like that going on in the family, and it did create problems, just the different attitudes towards things like that.
I can understand how that would, because not only was she raised in a different culture than she was raising her children, but also it was a different time.
You know, it was a different time. And she was not she didn't know the language, the English language, very well. And she certainly didn't understand the way Americans, the American attitude was towards people that did things for you, that you didn't treat them like servants. For her, it was just a natural thing. And that, of course, created problems between the generations. We had not only a generation gap, which is natural in a family, anywhere, but we had the difference in attitudes in different generations in the Chinese family as opposed to American family, where you're considered equals from one generation to another for the most part.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because your mother was basically old school Chinese.
Absolutely.
And she was raising...
She knew nothing else.
Yeah.
She knew nothing else. My brother, growing up in this country, knew nothing else. But what she knew and what he knew were quite different.
Yes.
And they didn't realize it.
And look at the time frame, too. I'm just thinking about that. The 1950s and 60s in America was very tremulous and completely new, fangled from everything.
Right, right. Yep. So it was not recognition on either of their parts that there was a cultural problem.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem. You have a problem.
That's right. How she reacted was, in his eyes, simply wrong, without understanding why she had the attitudes that she had. And I'm sure that in it's not just Chinese families. I'm sure in families of people from different countries, there are these problems that arise simply because one generation was exposed to a certain set of behaviors for different generations or whatever the situation might be. And it would create problems.
Yeah, I can understand that. Because, like you said, every generation is going to have their unique way of doing things. I'm going to take another little break here, and be right back.
Okay.
If you like the show tonight, let us know. Call 321-417-4309 or email mary@beunique.org to ask how you can sponsor the show. It's simple and doesn't have to cost much at all. Visit beunique.org for even more details. That's BUNEKE.org. Join the global world changers who already know how Be Unique helps bring together like-minded humans who are making the world a better place. Read the magazine and blog posts, watch our videos, listen to our podcast, and visit our social media from one location, and let's work together to change tomorrow by finding solutions today. Visit BUNEKE.org to learn more. That's BUNEKE.org.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Mary. I'm here with Jean and Dr. Anna Chow Pai. She has written a memoir or a biography called From Manchurian Princess to the American Dream, an anecdotal memoir of two immigrant lives. And we've been talking about generation gaps and cultural gaps and all kinds of fun stuff. But I know that you wrote a science fiction book called Choices, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I was trained as a scientist and trained in scientific writing. So for me to write something that was fiction was just simply a stroll in the park and an attempt at a kind of writing that I had never done in my career. So it was interesting. What I started out to do with the last book that I wrote, which was an autobiography, was that I wanted to leave something for my American-born children who were brought up by parents that grew up in this country and were more American than we were Chinese, even though we were Chinese to some extent as a result of being in families or coming from families that were quite Chinese in their behavior, even in the United States. So what I wrote started out being something just for my sons, because I figured I am in a generation that sort of bridges the gap between being very Chinese and very American. I've seen both sides. I've grown up in a family that gave me a very Chinese upbringing, because the plan was always to go back to China after the United States finished the Second World War. We were not going to stay here. And growing up in my family, we were constantly reminded by my parents, you're not Americans, you are Chinese. And eventually we will go back to China.
So, well, I have neighbors who are Italian, and they make it very clear. Yes, they live here, but they are Italians.
Yep.
They were both born in this country. But it was important to them that they, you know, to her especially,
yes,
she marry another Italian.
Right. Right. And of course we ended up, my brothers and I ended up marrying Chinese, but we married Chinese Americans, because none of us were very comfortable with really what we call Chinesey Chinese. Because culture was different, you know.
Yeah.
We were much comfortable with Chinese Americans that were brought up in America like we were. And in fact, we all ended up marrying Americans. Well, except my brother. My older brother did marry a Chinese woman, but she was someone that was very Americanized, like
uh-huh.
we were. So,
and that that makes a difference.
It makes a big difference if you have been able to look into any part of my autobiography. There's a chapter where I talk about the fact that I was very uncomfortable with very Chinese. I was much more comfortable with Chinese that grew up in this country like I did, because we were really more American in outlook than we were Chinese. And I had started a book about the history of my family, because we did have some very prominent people in our family that were important in modern Chinese history. And I wanted my children to know about their Chinese heritage. And so I started out with a book for them. And when I came to this retirement place, with my husband at that time, our friends here, the people that we made friends with here, all of them were Americans, not no Chinese here, were very enthusiastic in reading what I had written for my children because they wanted to know something about Chinese history and Chinese culture.
Right.
And so that's how the book, From a Manchurian Princess to the American Dream, how that book got written and published because they all wanted a copy.
That's really nice, though.
It was very nice of them, absolutely accepting. Yes,
yeah.
It made me feel very comfortable.
Well, I did not get a copy to review, but I think it's a great book that I would like to read and get to know a little bit more about your family.
Well, it's an unusual family. It was a prominent family because people in it a generation or two ago were very, very important. And involved in some important things that happened in modern Chinese history. Chiang Kai-shek was somebody whom not everybody in my family really liked as the leader of China because, That's a whole different story. We don't need to go into that. But
you've given enough for people to want to open up a book and do some research.
Well, also, too, as my children grew up and they started taking courses in high school and in college, that they naturally were interested in learning Chinese as a language and in getting some Chinese history because they could read about their great-grandmother or grandfather and be able to say to their professors, you know, this was part of my family.
Yes.
What they did and what happened and so forth was something that they had heard about from me and from my parents. So it was important for me to be able to instill in them, in my children, some interest and some pride in our history as a family and as being Chinese, coming from China.
Well, I'm not a member of your family, but I have a sense of that pride just talking with you. I think it's a great thing to share. Of course, me being a writer, I always think of that it's important to share history and let your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren know where they came from.
Well, I've always believed, and I guess that's why I ended up being an educator, that knowledge is what breeds tolerance.
Absolutely.
And that it was not something that where I wanted to hide that we had differences, but I wanted the differences to be well known because there are things in Chinese culture that are different from American culture, but sometimes I preferred the Chinese way, and sometimes I would prefer the American way. So it was something that I thought was sort of a privilege of being able to see a situation from two points of view and be able to choose the one that I thought made more sense.
I wish more people
Absolutely.
Were that open-minded.
Well, and what about the problem-solving skills it gives you? Kind of
yes,
an advantage.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The understanding that makes certain things not a problem that it might be for people who don't approach things in the same way.
See it that exact way. Yeah, exactly.
No.
Yeah. Opportunities for solutions, not
absolutely.
Problems.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, the more you get to know people that are different or were brought up differently, the better you understand why there are differences.
Yeah.
And that because there are differences, it doesn't mean one is right and one is wrong. You can have differences where both are right.
Sure.
But still different.
Well, and I think, too, that people can learn, once they get doing it, start learn that the differences actually feed on each other and create all kinds of magical things that, isolated, they don't create.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's understanding, essentially. It's being able to understand why people have the attitudes they have. And that explains a lot of things. And it makes being different not something to create conflict, but just to understand different ways of looking at things.
Yeah, I think the differences are what make each of us so special.
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. I know I do.
Useful of a different culture who have reacted to something differently from you, and then you get to understand why they react that way. It creates understanding, and understanding always creates tolerance.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Well, we're winding up to the end of our show, and I want to let everybody know they can buy the From Manchurian Princess to the American Dream on Amazon, and I'm sure it's in bookstores throughout.
Yes.
I think this is usually when Jean and I have our parting words. We like to leave everybody with a couple of words to be thinking about as they go on about their business. And what you've been saying throughout the show is understanding creates tolerance is a lot like my motto, that whatever you do, you can be kind.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Jean, are you going to veer from your typical parting words tonight?
I'm not. I'm going to be right in agreement with you. While I'm learning about everybody and I'm being tolerant and we're doing it together, I want to have fun. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right.
Absolutely. Right. There's always room for fun. There's always room for kindness. And there's always room for learning and tolerance.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And it's interesting, too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
A lot more fun.
Yeah.
So have you got anything else, Dr. Pai, that you'd like to make sure that our listeners know about you or your book or in general?
Well, I don't think that my book is great literature or anything like that, but it does give you the way immigrants can react to things when they come to a different country.
Mm-hmm.
And that even though you may disagree with what the reaction is, what you should try to do is to find out why they had the reaction.
Yes.
And maybe in the discussion of this, can explain to each other why there is a different reaction and understand that the difference is just that, is difference. And it's not that one is better than the other.
That's right. Being different doesn't make it wrong.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And that's something that, unfortunately, is not understood always.
Well, I guess we'll just have to keep trying a little harder to get people to understand it.
That's
well,
right.
I try that every day. I try to give as many people as different as I can.
That's great.
Dr. Pye, you'd have to know Gene to know the truth in that statement.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
He is a contrarian, but he's a very delightful contrarian.
Okay. We need people like
Yes, we do. We do.
We sure do. We sure do appreciate you coming to join us tonight. It's been
absolutely delightful
talking with you.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed speaking with you too, and I've always wanted people to know that even though there are obvious differences in the way we look from each other and in the way that we react to things because of our different ways of upbringing, the way we were brought up, that basically we're all alike.
I think
we're
more
are.
Alike than a lot of people want to admit.
Mm-hmm.
Or think. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And we have never felt like foreigners, my brothers and I. I'm sure my parents did.
Mm-hmm.
But we have never felt that we were foreigners.
Well, you know, I tend to make myself at home wherever I am, but I know that if I went to South Dakota where Gene grew up, I probably would feel a little out of my element.
Mm-hmm.
And
feel out
of your
element without being judgmental.
Exactly, exactly. That's the key. That is so spot on, because it's, you know, there are places all over this country and all over the world that are different culturally, but they're deep down inside, they're housed by humans that are so
right.
much alike that it's scary.
Absolutely.
Despite our differences, we are very much alike because we all want the same thing. We all want to be loved. We want to be respected. We want to be cared for.
And for people to use the obvious differences, our physical differences, even some aspects of our attitudes, to decide to judge those differences in terms of right or wrong is really just, I just don't understand it. I just find it ridiculous.
It is.
That just because I have black hair, and well, I used to have black hair, and you might be blonde or something, that makes some kind of really important difference between us. That's just
black
ridiculous.
Black is probably the only color I've never dyed my hair.
Yeah, well, I don't like hair that's been dyed black. Somehow or other, it just doesn't look right.
No, it doesn't, because it doesn't go with your skin tone.
It doesn't go with your skin tone, and you don't have. I think it just looks fake.
Well, my grandma did that, and hers kind of turned blue, I think.
Oh wow!
It was so black it was
one
blue.
One of the ways
like,
it turned looks fake.
But folks, we are really, really running out of time, and
I don't
want us to totally lose this. But I really enjoyed talking with you, Dr. Pye. It was a delight. And
thank you so much. Appreciate that.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. And on that note,
I hope you bring more such differences that we can talk about on your program.
Thank you. Yeah. That's one of the things that Gene and I love to do is find somebody who's doing something differently or is living differently and focus on that for just an hour. And it
That's terrific. That leads to understanding, and understanding, like I've said before, it leads to tolerance.
Mm. Yes, it does.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
And Mary, I'll see you very
soon.
Yes,
you shall. Yes, you will.
Bye-bye,
everybody.
Bye.
Thank you for listening this evening. We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did.
Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that our newly branded podcast has so many global listeners and that our website and magazine receive thousands of visitors each month. Let's put your brand in front of all those people. Mary can share the demographics with you. Contact her through the website. That's BUNEKE.org.